From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Coming up tonight, we're going to talk about the opening of Autumn Equinox. This is an art exhibit collaboration between New York City's Auxia Klein and Sullivan County's Hall Space by Nanetta and Eldred. It'll explore themes of transition, nature, and identity. Patricio Rabayo has that story coming up in the second half of the program. In just a couple minutes, I'll be talking to Carter Walker of Vote Beat PA about judicial retention. There will be a statewide judicial race. There will be multiple judicial races at the top of the ballot in Pennsylvania in November, and those races are more important than ever. Carter Walker coming right up. But first, we have news from Washington, D.C., where lawmakers from Connecticut and New York introduced a bill this week to give workers 12 weeks of partial pay when they can't work due to a major life event. The paid leave would cover things like health conditions, a new baby, military deployment, and domestic violence. U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York is one of the bill's sponsors.
The United States is still the only developed country in the entire world that does not have a national paid leave program. This means that for many working families in our country, they are one emergency away from making the impossible decision of meeting that need of a loved one or bringing home a paycheck to feed them.
And now for some upstate New York tech news. New York State is spending $300 million on the future of the internet. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports.
Quantum computers are different than classical computers. But scientists say they will be much more powerful and solve more complicated problems, especially once they're connected over the internet. State University of New York Chancellor John King says new funds will let Stony Brook University conduct research on how to build networks between quantum computers. The school already has a quantum internet test network.
This new hub will leverage Stony Brook's existing strengths and resources so that we can become a premier global center in this critical technology area.
The money will be used to hire top researchers and build more laboratories. Governor Hochul says it will eventually lead to new companies and new jobs. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
Thank you to the New York Public News Network for that report. As we head into another election cycle, we are kicking things off with our coverage here by taking a closer look at something that often flies under the radar, judicial retention. What does it mean when you're asked whether a judge should be retained and why does it matter? And what's coming up in the 2025 elections in our listening area in Pennsylvania? Joining me to break this all down is Carter Walker, government reporter for Vote Beat PA and Spotlight PA, who's been covering the judiciary and Pennsylvania politics with clarity and depth. Carter, welcome back to the local edition.
Thanks for having me.
I wasn't really entirely clear this technical term, so I'm hoping you can walk us through what judicial retention means, at least in Pennsylvania.
Sure. So when a judge in Pennsylvania, we elect our judges. Some states appoint them, but here in Pennsylvania, they run for election like any other candidate. And when they first run to get on the bench, they run in the primary with a political party, Democrat, Republican, and then perhaps two candidates will face each other in November, and that's how they win elections. But when their term is up, unlike other candidates who basically do that whole process again, judges just run to be retained. So it's a retention election. And basically what that means is that the voters are just asked, yes or no, do you want to retain this judge for another term, another 10 years? So it'll be a very simple question for the voters. Yes, do you think they've done a good job? No, do you not think they've done a good job? And would you like them to stick around?
Okay, and what happens if people say no? I mean, are these judges that usually serve on a fuller court or panel, and there are other members that take up a slack until people actually do vote for somebody else?
Well, if they were to not be retained, the way you kind of alluded to it, there has been a tricky situation in the past when if these seats were to be empty, that can be tricky. Because, you know, then we could have a split court making getting definitive rulings tricky. But in this instance, if they were to lose retention, what would happen is the governor would nominate a replacement, and that would have to be approved by the legislature. And then that replacement would serve until the next municipal election in 2027, at which point both parties could put up a candidate.
Okay, so that's the basics of the process. Why? I mean, it sounds pretty straightforward. This is how Pennsylvania does things. But you've been doing a lot of reporting on this recently. Why is that?
Yeah, well, this is definitely the top of the ticket for this year. You know, this is a municipal election cycle, and it's really the toughest one to get voters to turn out to because it's right after the presidential election year. So this is the top of the ticket race this year. And why it's really important, you may remember a couple of months ago, Elon Musk and a lot of Republican groups were really focusing on a judicial race in Wisconsin for their state Supreme Court. These judicial top court races for state courts have really become a point of interest for political parties in the past couple of years because they can have tremendous influence on the policies of a state. Here in Pennsylvania, these judges have ruled on things like the lockdown orders from the governor during the COVID-19 pandemic. They have ruled on the funding model for our schools, finding that, you know, it wasn't quite fair and the legislature needed to redo that. But a lot of the reason that they've been getting attention over the past couple of years is because of what I cover, election policy. They have ruled on cases that twice now invalidated our congressional maps due to gerrymandering and said, you know, you guys got to go redraw those maps. But when the legislature and the governor couldn't come to an agreement, they drew their own maps. They've ruled on things that we've talked about several times on the show, you know, whether or not ballots can be cured, you know, voters can fix the errors, if voters can return their ballots to a drop box or if they have to go to the county office, whether or not ballots should have to have a date on the return envelope. So because of those rulings, a lot of which Republicans don't like how they ruled on that, Republicans are pushing folks to vote no so that they can have a chance at getting their judges on the court in 2027.
Sounds like by the nature of your work, you're very familiar with the importance of these judicial retention races and the makeup of the state Supreme Court. Sounds like players at the national level are realizing the importance of similar races. But the voters in Pennsylvania, do they understand this importance that you're talking about? Why do you think they're unfamiliar with these races?
Well, I certainly hope that they recognize the importance of it. And I'll say, I think, I don't know for sure. I don't have any polling on it, but I would say it feels like people are more and more aware of these courts and what they do because they've, you know, issued some really important rulings over the past couple of years, changing the congressional districts that we vote in, changing how our local schools are funded, ruling on the governor's lockdown orders. There's been a lot of high profile things that they've done that have gained attention. And of course, now the political parties are pushing folks to view those decisions, either in an unfavorable light if they're Republican or in a favorable light if they're Democrat, wanting to retain those judges.
Right. Are there some people out there that aren't even into these races? They would just rather not see this happen?
In the past couple of years, there have been some folks that have advocated for doing away with judicial elections altogether. Some people think it would be better just to appoint our judges, number one, so that they're not running as partisans and you take that question out of the equation to a degree. And then also just because they feel, you know, our ballots are pretty complicated as it is. There's a lot of candidates on them, particularly in these municipal election years when judges get elected. And it's tough for voters to go through and make it, you know, inform themselves on every candidate and their positions and make really, informed choices. And they feel, you know, an appointment system might help us get past that.
How strongly are they pushing to get rid of these? Are they really putting an effort into this?
Yeah, well, there's certainly some people that would like to see it, but, you know, there's lots of things that lots of people would like to see happen in Pennsylvania that doesn't really move very quickly. And so right now, I wouldn't say it's an imminent thing that's going to happen.
So what do you want voters to know about these races as we head into the election season here?
I guess what I would say is that the messaging on these races from both political parties and, you know, from groups aligned on the left and the right, it's going to be really simple, right? It's going to be vote yes, these are good, fair judges, or vote no, these are unfair judges, and we want to kick them out. That, you know, that messaging doesn't really get to what the judges have actually done in office. So I think what's most important for voters to do is really familiarize themselves with the specifics of the cases that these judges have ruled on. You know, we recently did a story on five of their most important election law cases over the past few years. And it's, you know, sometimes these judges are voting with their Republican colleagues. Sometimes they're voting together as a block, all Democrats. So when the messaging says that these judges, you know, had this effect on our laws here in Pennsylvania, it might not be that all the judges ruled the way that the case came out. So really researching what they've done rather than just, you know, absorbing the yes or no message that's coming towards you, I think is important.
Do you have advice on how voters can access more nonpartisan information before they head to the polls?
Yeah, well, I think that we, you know, at VoteBeat, we're trying to do our best to inform people how they've ruled on election cases, and we're going to keep doing that. There's another case before them right now that I'm working on a story about. Obviously, our partners at Spotlight PA do a fantastic job every year with their voter guides, and I know they have one coming out soon on these judicial candidates, you know, their background and all the information you should need. Then there's a lot of there are local groups out there too that I'm sure will be putting together guides to the election. I can think of the Committee 70. They'll likely be doing one. That's a good government group out of Philadelphia. So I would say do your best to look for information beyond just the ads that the political parties are putting out.
Your beat for VoteBeat is often about how the elections are being run. There's a lot of news about that. In Pennsylvania, we've had you on a lot the last couple of years. Are you following any stories at the state level in Pennsylvania about how elections are being run? Is there anything that might end up going before the courts? What are you watching for this far out?
Well, I'm sure there's always going to be something that goes before the courts. That is the trend over the past couple of years. I guess there's two things I'm really interested in right now. You know, the state announced the changes to the provisional ballot envelope, which would, you know, we'd done some reporting back in the spring on the design of the envelope potentially causing people to miss some of the fields that they need to fill out on it and then having their provisional ballot rejected because of that. The state, you know, is aware of those problems as well, and they redesigned that envelope, hoping to cut down on that rejection rate. But the counties have to voluntarily adopt that envelope style instead of just using the old one. So I'll be looking to see how many counties do adopt that and if it does reduce the error rate. I also think there's a really interesting dichotomy going on right now between national Republicans and state Republicans. You know, many in the state party activists here on the ground pushing for voters to use mail voting because, you know, it's a convenient way for voters to vote and also for it's a good way for them to turn out their voters. But obviously we've seen that President Trump is not a fan of mail voting and is, as he says, trying to lead a movement to do away with it altogether. So we really have this split in strategy and messaging at different levels of the Republican Party, and that's something I'm looking to explore.
Yeah, are you seeing any reaction on the ground yet? It was just the middle of last month, just a month ago, where the president came out, you know, swinging again on this issue, as you said, vowing to end mail-in voting. Has there been any reaction from the folks on the ground administering elections or from the parties themselves?
Well, we're not seeing any more push to do away with mail voting in Pennsylvania other than the, you know, low-lying grumbles that we've heard about it over the past couple of years since it went into effect. Nothing moving towards, the legislature has other things on their mind right now, I'll just say that. But soon enough, we should be getting some data on mail ballot requests, how many people are asking for them for this upcoming election. And that's some data I'll be taking a look at to see, okay, A, are they requesting their ballots? Could that have been affected by Trump's renewed push to do away with it? And if so, then again, how is that going to affect the judicial retention race?
Right. And when you get that information, you're going to be bringing it to the public, and we're going to be bringing you back on air to talk about it. We've been talking to Carter Walker, and the article was PA Election 2025, what is judicial retention and why does it matter for Supreme Court balance? That's up at spotlightpa.org, and you can see Carter's work at VoteBeatPA, that's VoteBeat.org, and you look for Pennsylvania. Carter, as always, thank you so much for this work that you do.
Thank you.
We've got more news to come. Patricio Rubio has a scoop on a big upstate downstate art gallery collaboration, and I'm going to take you out to the woods. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Today is just sort of day one of a very long sort of legal process to try to uncover everything about what drove him, motivated him, his life, his mental state. There's a lot more that we still need to know about Tyler Robinson and what was going on inside his mind.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
On this Old House Radio Hour, imagine if your home could produce as much energy as it uses. Our guest was able to do it, and you can too.
When you look over the year, I'm producing more energy than I actually use.
Plus, OnPoint's Magna Chakrabarty takes us back to our childhood home in Corvallis, Oregon. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour.
Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
This is a local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Well, this weekend marks the opening of Autumn Equinox. This is a cross-gallery art exhibit collaboration between Auxier Klein in New York City's Lower East Side and Hall Space by Nonetta and Eldred, New York. The show brings together a diverse group of established young artists whose work explore themes of transition, nature, and identity, perfectly timed with the seasonal shift that we're all experiencing right now. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio spoke with Brent Auxier, co-owner of Auxier Klein, about the gallery's beginnings in the city, its mission to spotlight queer and emerging voices, and how this partnership with Hall Space is bringing new perspectives and vibrant artwork to Sullivan County.
The co-owner, Kate Klein, and I worked together at a gallery in Chelsea for a long time and started bouncing the idea of starting our own space. And then we started online, like right before COVID hit. So for 2 years, we were just an online gallery because everything was shut down. And then after a couple years, we found a space on the Lower East Side, which is when we got a physical location. And we've been there for almost 4 years now.
Oh, wow. So if for those who don't know the gallery, who has never been to the gallery, how would you define it, and what is sort of the mission of the gallery and the type of artist that you seek out?
Yeah, so we're located in like the Lower East Side in a neighborhood called Two Bridges, where there's a bunch of galleries. And we focus mainly on emerging and mid-career artists. And the focus is a lot on painting and works on paper mostly.
So, and on your website, I do see that the work navigates identity, like with queer experience, intimacy, and still life portraits, sort of a mix. When you have a show, when you're curating a show to put together, how do you choose what to exhibit? Like, do you follow themes, or do you sort of respond to artists that submit work?
Well, we have a group, like a stable of artists that we work with regularly now. Like Logan T. Sibrel is up. We've worked with him many times. Ken Wynn is another artist we worked with. Stephen Gay, who's an abstract painter. So it's either solo shows by those artists, or we curate group shows that are based on a theme. Like we do a summer show every year that sort of focuses on that season. And then we've done things like Blush, which is a color, or we did a show focused on New York City, that paintings that showed the city. So it kind of depends of what we come up with and what we see sort of happening in the artist studios while we're visiting them. Sometimes there's like a natural, you can see there's something in the zeitgeist kind of that's happening that all the artists are working on. And so that then will become a catalyst for a group show.
Since I'm curious, since the gallery started, you know, virtually, you know, during the pandemic, has the gallery evolved since then? And now that you have a physical space to show the work, has sort of the, has the gallery evolved in some way?
Yeah, I would say for sure. It was nice to just be online for a while when everyone was, because it sort of equaled the playing field. You know, suddenly like a blue chip gallery or an emerging gallery, there was no space to compare, right? So that was a nice way for us to sort of try, you know, try new artists, try some theme shows, you know, like see what landed. And then from that, it really gave us a base to build up so we could be confident in having our physical space and hosting openings and gatherings there. You know, we've had authors do readings, you know, other events. So it's nice to sort of physically have the space and build that community.
Yeah, absolutely. Now let's talk about this opening reception you're having up here in our neck of the woods in Eldred, Autumn Equinox. How did the partnership with Hall Space come about?
So during the pandemic, my partner purchased a house actually in Eldred. And we'd been coming to the area for years, just getting Airbnbs and visiting, and we knew we really liked it. So after being cooped up in our apartment for a year during lockdown, it was very nice to find a place there. And then through Nona's gallery, we had seen posters around, started going to her openings and events, and struck up a friendship over the years. So then both of us having galleries, you know, we started having a conversation about combining those efforts and showing some of our artists and bringing them to a new audience in the Catskills.
Right. And that sort of came together in this show that's opening this weekend, Autumn Equinox. Can you talk about some of the artists that are involved in the show and the type of work they produce?
Yeah, so the show is sort of about the time when summer is turning to fall, which will actually happen on the 22nd of September, so a couple days after the opening. So there's a lot of work about sort of nature, that time period, the change of season, and what that does sort of to the psychology of a person as well. But we will have work by Sarah Davidson, who's actually a Canadian artist. And their work is very close-up images of butterfly wings that are depicted in like very thick oil paint. They almost become abstract. They're very beautiful. We have Hank Ehrenfried, some of his paintings of apple orchards, you know, jasmine. He also does some sort of like collage elements in his paintings. And then we'll have Stephen Gay, who is an abstract painter of landscapes. Marissa Graziano, who has a painting of very realistic-looking roses. And then we have Ken Nguyen, who is a painter that his paintings are a lot about being in the car that are in the show, the sort of traveling back and forth or driving around in nature. But yeah, those are a few of the artists that we'll be showing. There'll be eight in total.
Eight in total, wow. And it said, it just gives some details of the opening reception this Saturday, September 20th, starting at 4, all the way to going to 7 at Hall Space. It's happening at 550 State Route 55 in Eldred, New York. And yes, you know, we're having that sort of transition right now from summer to fall. And I'm sure when you come up here, you're going to notice that some of the leaves are already changing.
Yeah, we drove up last weekend and noticed that. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's definitely a change. So I'm excited for the show because if you're capturing that mood, because, you know, I'm originally from the city, but moving up here, I become so aware of the nature around me. And, you know, I guess living in the city, I sort of relied on technology to tell me, you know, the weather and things like that. But now up here, living up here, I sort of rely more on what the animals are doing or what clouds look like. And it's just, so I guess, is that sort of the theme that you sort of, are you putting out there also with the autumn equinox, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love that idea of sort of actually, you know, being informed about the environment from looking at the environment, right? Instead of like checking the weather app. But yeah, it's about that mood, that changing, and sort of, you know, I think there's this sort of like back to school mentality too, where like the carefree time of summer is coming to an end, and maybe, you know, you're getting back to work, and maybe there's a little anxiety in that, but also then the things like the leaves changing, looking forward to like Halloween, right? Like there's still a lot to look forward to. It's just like taking that step to enjoying the fall season, leaning back into that.
Yeah. So you have in the show opening up this weekend. It goes all the way until October 12th. Brett, before we go, is there anything else you want to talk about as far as like any upcoming shows you have, either at Whole Space or down in your gallery in Lower East Side?
Well, right now we have a show by Logan T. Sibrel up. It's his third solo show with us. And then after that, we'll have a show in October of Alexandra Smith, some new paintings. Mm. And Alexandra also has a piece in the show up in Hall Space, too. So you can see that in Eldred.
That's great. And if people want more information on your gallery down in the city, where can they go?
You can go to our website, oxerklein.com, and we're located at 19 Monroe Street in Manhattan.
So we're talking to Brett Oxer about the upcoming show, Autumn Equinox at Hall Space, happening in Eldred. It's opening this weekend, September 20th, starting at 4. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. I do really appreciate it, Brent, and you know, I look forward to seeing the show in person. So thank you so much for joining me on the program.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Well, thank you, Patricio. Well, before we go, I want to take you with me to Big Pond. This is a small mountain lake north of Livingston Manor, New York. It's up on Barkaboom Road. People go there to fish, hike, boat, swim, and camp. But on September 6th, folks were there to clean. They're cleaning up Big Pond as part of Catskill Park Day. And I was there, and I spoke to one of the members of the public who volunteered to help clean Big Pond.
Hi, my name's Karen Holden. I'm out here with my very good friend Minot, and we are being trail stewards responsible for nature. We are cleaning up, and we are noticing that most people probably weren't Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts based on the amount of trash they left. So here's your reminder to please take out what you take in.
You're signed up to volunteer to do this? Could you just tell me a little bit, like, have you done things like this before, and like, what's the motivation?
Okay, so I haven't done anything like this formally in quite some time, but my friend Minot sent me an Instagram post and said, hey, would you like to do this? And I thought it looked like great fun. And also, I love to hike and be in nature, and I like to see nature as it should be, not as sometimes people leave it with trash. So I feel like I'm helping the next person who comes through here have a better experience because they just get to experience nature and not garbage. Typically, when I walk, I like the rail trails. We have a lot of great rail trails in Sullivan County. I do notice that people leave trash behind, despite the fact that there are plenty of garbages. So I do pick them. I do pick up stuff. This is more formal, though, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm very impressed with how organized it is and with everyone that showed up. We have been finding an awful lot of cans and bottles for people who probably were having a good time at the campsite. Some of them are broken. We found a chair that someone burned in a fireplace. And one thing that's really cool is we have found a lot of bear poop. So it looks like the bear is eating a lot of what was left behind. There's lots of berries in it too. So good year for the bears. And I'm enjoying being out in nature, meeting new people like you.
Okay. Well, I'm thank you for meeting new people. I hope you don't meet any new bears.
I'm okay with that. I'm making enough noise, whistling. I think I'm good. And the only thing I would be sad about is if I met a bear is the fact that I don't have my phone on me, so I would not get a picture.
Okay. Well, thanks for talking.
Anytime. I love to talk. Have a great one.
You too.
And that's just one of the folks I talked to at the Catskill Park Day cleanup event at Big Pond. Hear my full 10-minute report on this week's Farm and Country coming your way Saturday morning at 10. But right now, that's it for me. I'm Jason Dole. It's been the Local Edition. I will actually be off the next two nights, and I'll be back with you here next Wednesday. For now, stay with us. Coming up, we've got more news from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.